Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is loading. SteveJonesShow.com audio is sponsored by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call them at 800-609-9484 or visit them online at REWfinancial.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
On this blazing hot day, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our phone line always sponsored by Lenape Solar. Visit them online at lenapesolar.com. They're by Rick Wasser, LC. Call Rick at 800-609-9484 or visit them online at rewfinancial.com. The number one choice in the Major League Baseball draft last year, Gerrit Cole. And he finally made his Double-A debut in the same ballpark on the same mound that Steven Strasburg made his Double-A debut. Strasburg was with the Harrisburg Senators at the time. It was in Altoona. Last night, pitching in the Pirates organization, Gerrit Cole out of UCLA, last year's number one overall pick, made his Double-A debut. Five strong innings last night. Tyler Mon is the play-by-play voice of the Altoona Curve. Tyler, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on the Steve Jones Show here on WKOK.
Absolutely. You too. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. Let's talk about Gerrit Cole, the Pirates' first overall choice in last year's draft, taken out of UCLA. Went out last night with a lot of eyeballs with some scrutiny on him. What did you think of the number one pick from last year?
You know, I was very impressed. He is a guy who we could instantly tell from when he had his introductory press conference here in Altoona on Tuesday is extraordinarily mature, very bright, and has a good head on his shoulders. And that factors in, I think, a lot more than people realize to how you handle a promotion. It's not just good enough to go out and have good stuff and be able to work it on the mound. You've got to be able to keep your composure and understand what exactly a promotion like this means and how to handle it. And, I mean, it was very impressive. He, according to the ballpark radar gun, hit 96 a handful of times. Now, we've been told today that there were scouts who had radar guns who actually had him as high as 99 on the night, so he might have been a couple of ticks slow here, but very impressive. He worked early on with his fastball, started to mix in his changeup and his breaking stuff throughout probably the second time through the order, but he was extraordinarily impressive. It was you see a lot of guys kind of come up and they'll get that first start under their belt and shrink under the limelight a little bit. He was not fazed by anything here, and it was a very encouraging first time out for him.
What kind of command did he have of every pitch?
It was good. The fastball command, I think, has been the biggest thing for him to get started. That's what they really impress upon guys at the high A level, to make sure that you command the fastball and you can spot it well. The fastball is what he used basically for the first three innings. I don't think we saw a breaking pitch from him until toward the end of the third inning. But he commanded everything very well. He got into a couple of three-ball counts early on and fought back from them. Got one out on a three-ball count, gave up his first hit in the fourth inning on a three-ball count. But he didn't issue a walk the entire day. And it seemed like even when he wasn't controlling things in the brief spurts that he had where he would fall into a three-ball count, he had been so good control-wise up until that point that I think a lack of control in those very few and far between counts almost benefited him because New Britain hitters were not expecting to see something that wasn't pinpointed. So he got guys to a little bit. Overall, it was a really impressive outing.
You talked about how he handled himself in the press conference. He also knows that he walks out on the mound. He is the number one overall choice, and thus there will be more scrutiny on him. And that, let's face it, he has the target on his chest. You have to have a certain mental makeup to him. And when you've been around him, how impressed are you by that mental makeup?
Very impressed. And I think it's something that is it's been ingrained in him since he went to UCLA. A lot of people don't know he was actually drafted 28th overall. He was a first-round draft pick of the New York Yankees back in 2008. And this is kind of a sign of the maturity to come with Gerrit. He didn't even enter into negotiations with the Yankees. And as a first-round pick, you're going to get a good amount of money. You can skip your college days. You can go out with a signing bonus and immediately jump into pro ball. He and his family said, no, he needs to go to college. He needs those few years to grow up and learn about himself as a person, gain a little bit more maturity. So imagine growing up, he was a Yankees fan as a kid. You're drafted by your favorite team in the first round, and you go, not even going to talk contract with you. I'm going to go to college. That's a pretty impressive thing, and I think that's where the role really started to get going for him, to learn what it's like to be on a big stage, to pitch in big times. He was in the College World Series Finals with UCLA back in 2010. And I think that's where it started to grow for him. And he was talking to us after his press conference on Tuesday and said that he's, you know, sort of used to it by now. Drafted by the Pirates first overall, had the press conference in Pittsburgh. He's gone through this stuff before, so it doesn't really faze him. And I think a lot of that is due to the fact that he dealt with it so much as the frontline guy for a major college rotation with a lot of success in UCLA.
Obviously, he did not do a thing last year after he signed, because he did not sign until August 15th. And then eventually went down, instructional league, and so forth. He starts out at high A, now to double A. Has anybody mentioned what potentially, if he stays on track, how long his stay in Altoona could be?
You know, we haven't actually heard anything to project how long the Pirates expect he could be here. He did get a little action at a higher level last year after he signed. Like you mentioned, he didn't go to any full-season leagues after he signed at the deadline, but he did go down and pitch in the Arizona Fall League, which is the premier off-season league for minor league prospects and for a guy to have not pitched in minor league ball and then go to the AFL. And he was selected to start the All-Star game, the Rising Stars game, the Arizona Fall League. I think that got him acclimated to a high level of pro ball early on. I would assume, and this is just me with a guess, I would assume that at the latest, we could see him here for the rest of the season. It would not be out of the question, I don't think, for him to maybe make a cameo in Indianapolis in August and see where things go from there if he continues on a good roll. But it's a big adjustment. Coming up to double-A guys, and we saw it last night, they're not fazed by fastballs that hit 98 miles an hour like they are in high A. You're going to get a lot more free-swinging guys in the Florida State League that'll chase a 98-mile-an-hour spotted fastball and go down for strike three, whereas here they're going to go after a 98-mile-an-hour fastball and they're going to turn it around for a double, as Aaron Hicks did last night with the first hit that Garrett allowed. So I think if he stays on this role, there's a good chance that we could see him in Indianapolis over the next couple of months. But for now, I think the Pirates are content to let him come out here, work in a good pitcher's ballpark, work in a very advanced league, and throw him into the fire and see what they get for the next few weeks.
With Tyler Mond, the fine play-by-play voice of the Altoona Curve, and you're around it every day, you know that this is the make-or-break level in the minor leagues. If you can make it somehow here and keep yourself in the mix. If you can't cut it, your career then heads down from here. So in this make-or-break level, when you look at some of the guys out there that the Curve have, what are some guys that you look at right away and say, you know what, I don't know if they'll be in the major leagues or not. They could be, but they've made it in your eyes because they can handle the level.
You know, there are a couple of guys who, one of them came off the disabled list, had his first game since the end of May last night. The other one, since really the beginning of May, has been on an absolute tear, and I'll start with him first. That's shortstop Brock Holt. Brock is another big D1 college guy, came out of Rice University in Texas. He's leading the team in average right now. He's fourth in the league in batting average, came into last night at 320 overall this season, and he's just caught fire. He hasn't had back-to-back games without a hit since May 5th and 6th, and we're nearing the end part of June now, and plays a very fine shortstop. He's the type of guy that I feel like will contribute at the major league level in some capacity. I'm not sure if he's going to be a shortstop forever, but I think he's going to be a very serviceable big league guy down the road. And another guy is another Texas college guy, and it's Matt Curry, the first baseman from TCU. And Matt was out for the better part of three and a half weeks with a right hamstring injury. But he's kind of the classic, everybody saw the movie Moneyball. Well, for people who have read the book Moneyball, they talked about how guys were often described as being bad-bodied baseball players and never really got a look down the road for major league organizations. And that has really been a mold that has changed over the last decade plus. Matt Curry was kind of that guy. He doesn't necessarily look like a gigantic behemoth, like a Ron Howard, for example, like that. He's about 6'1", 220 pounds, but he drives the ball to all fields. He can hit to the gaps. He can hit for power. He hits for average, plays a very smooth first base. And I think he's another guy who's going to turn some heads down the road. He was the first member of the 2010 draft class to make it to double-A. He did that last year, and he's just been a steady guy in the middle of the order. Last night, first game back in the lineup for him in 3 weeks, and had a double, drove another ball hard out to center field, took a walk, was hit by a pitch one time, so didn't really skip a beat, which is a very difficult thing to do, to be out of action for that long and come back and seamlessly get back into a groove. So those are definitely a couple of guys who I think would be big contributors down the line that people might not necessarily be aware of right now.
And we saw that here in State College. Matt Curry and Brock Holt both began their respective professional careers here. Curry impressed me by exactly what you said. He not only had power where he could pull it, but he could hit to all fields. And he had, I think he had 4 or 5 triples when he was here as well. Brock Holt can not only play shortstop, but he can also play second base. He was primarily a second baseman here at State College. So, yeah, I can see why you said that about both those guys, because I was actually going to specifically ask about Holt, because Holt's probably one of the top 10 players I've seen come through here.
He's really been unbelievable this year, and I mean, it has been since the beginning of the month of May. I'd have to look up his full average, but I would imagine it's over 400 for the last month. He's just been out of his mind. He had a 3-hit night to open this series on Tuesday, and another guy who he goes to the plate with a different level of confidence. When you see Brock come to the plate now, it's like he knows that he's going to get on. It's just a question of whether it's going to be a single or a double, or he's going to have a chance to stretch his legs and go for three. He has been outstanding, and Matt, like you said, he's just a very steady guy and somebody who provides consistency in the heart of the order. And those were two things that were really lacking for this team at the beginning of the season when they struggled through April. But those guys have been a couple of catalysts who have really propelled this offense to a lot better days over the last month and month and a half.
Tyler, it's an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thanks so much for the insight you gave us into what Garrett Cole has done so far and also into the rest of the team. And we can't wait to talk to you the rest of the season.
Steve, sounds good. Thank you so much. Anytime.
Tyler Mond, he's the play-by-play voice of the Altoona Kerr, talking about the double-A level. And by the way, in the single-A level tonight,
Luis Heredia, 17 years old, babyface, who is 6'6", 230 pounds. The Pirates invested $2.6 million in him. The 17-year-old pitches here tonight against the Cutters. Today's show being brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call 1-800-609-9484. Visit Rick online at rewfinancial.com. Kevin and I open up the Lenape Solar Hotline in a few moments at 1-800-795-9565 to talk with you as we continue with the Steve Jones Show on WKOK after this. Welcome back. Today's show being brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call 800-609-9484. Visit them online at rewfinancial.com. 1-800-795-9565 is our number. That's the Lenape Solar Hotline, powered by Lenape Solar. You can always get more information at lenapesolar.com from the beautiful Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, and also Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Been a long time since we've heard from you. We just want to make sure you're all right.
I'm good. Thanks. Well, hey, you know, it is the Steve Jones Show. The Kevin Hurst spinoff hasn't started yet.
And what are the odds?
Very thin.
Okay.
Let me put it this way. I would have done better betting on the Preakness, the Derby, and the Belmont combined.
Yes. I mean, did Norm and Cliff get their own show?
Didn't they try? They had talked about that. Norm got his own show, but it wasn't the same character.
That's exactly right. All right. That should tell you everything.
Needless to say, it didn't last the season either on CBS.
No, it didn't. All right. ESPN has brought out 4 intriguing top 25 lists just to have some fun.
This ought to be good.
Oh, no. I like this. I like this a lot, actually.
How many soccer players are on it?
No, it's a top 25 playoff list. They do one for each of the 4 major sports.
Oh, okay.
Top 25 baseball playoff. Number 25, Dave McNally of the Orioles in the 1969 American League Championship Series Game 2. Goes 11 innings, gives up 3 hits, strikes out 11, throws an 11-inning shutout. Orioles beat the Twins 1-0. Orioles win the series in 3 straight. Tie for 23. Mickey Lolich wins Game 7 of the 1968 World Series over Bob Gibson. 3 complete games. He won Game 2, Game 5, and, of course, then he wins Game 7 on just 2 days' rest.
Complete game, 5 hits, 1 run. Struck out 4, walked 3. Tied with Tom Glavine, 1995 Braves clincher, World Series Game 6. Went 8 innings, 1 hitter, beat the Indians 1-0, struck out 8. Number 22 was Pedro Martinez of the Red Sox, American League Divisional Series, 5th and deciding game. Fighting back pain, left game 1, comes back and throws 6 innings in long relief. In the 6 innings, he does not give up a hit or a run and strikes out 8. Red Sox win the series in 5. Because of the back issue, he throws almost nothing but curveballs and junk. 21, Tim Lincecum, Giants, 2010 NLDS, game 1, goes 9 innings. 2 hits, strikes out 14. Giants beat the Braves 1-0.
Haven't seen anything like that this year.
No, he's not even close. His ERA is up over 6. Giants win in 4. I mean, and the odd thing is the Giants lead the wild card without him doing well.
He's 2-8.
Tim Lincecum is 2-8, and the Giants lead the wild card, and the Giants have not had the favorable schedule the Dodgers have. Nobody has. Do you realize the Dodgers have only played, we've talked about the 4 games in the Eastern Time Zone. It, you know the next time they play a game in the Eastern Time Zone? July 20th.
I was going to say August, but...
A week after the All-Star break. That's tied with Josh Beckett, who pitched the clinching game for the Marlins, Game 6. 2003 World Series at Yankee Stadium. They beat the Yanks 2-0, complete game, 5-hitter, struck out 9. That's tied with Curt Schilling, Game 6 American League Championship Series, the first Bloody Sox game. 7 innings, 99 pitches, Red Sox win 4-2. He gave up just 1 run on 4 hits. He struck out 4, didn't walk a batter. That's because of the procedure performed by Dr. Morgan, in which they were able to suture it. He had a torn tendon. 18, George Brett, 85 American League Championship Series for the Kansas City Royals, Game 3. Royals beat the Blue Jays 6-5. He went 4-for-4, scored 4 runs, knocked in 3. Brilliant performance. Kansas City 1-7, went on to win the World Series. Hit a couple of home runs along the way as well. 17, Sarah is going to love this one. Brooks Robinson, Game 3, 1970 World Series. 2-for-4, knocked in a pair of runs and made 3 dazzling plays in the field that were just off the charts. Plus, he hit a home run. And, of course, the Orioles won the series in 5. 15, Tommy Agee, 69 World Series. Game 3 makes 2 dramatic catches and hits a leadoff solo homer off Jim Palmer in the bottom of the 1st. Steve Garvey also at 15. NLCS game 4, 1984. 4-for-5, drove in 5. And, I'm sorry?
No, I was going to say, Steve Garvey never looked like a baseball player. I mean, he just didn't have that look about him. Just didn't. I'm sorry. I'm not saying he was bad.
Powerfully built guy.
He was short. It's not the what you would imagine in a baseball player. Yeah, I thought he did well with it. I'm not saying he didn't. It's just never really have the image of him as the stereotypical baseball player.
Yeah, we had home run, a double, a pair of singles, and 5 runs. Then.
Not necessarily David, a power hitter. This is what I was thinking.
Okay. David Freese, 2011 World Series Game 6. Cardinals beat the Rangers 10-9. He, of course, went 2-for-5, knocked in 3. 1 pitch away from elimination. The Rangers were up 3-2, 7-5 lead. He hits a 2-run triple beyond the reach of right fielder Nelson Cruz to send the extra innings. And then the bottom of the 11th, he hits a 428 home run to win it. 428-foot home run. Roger Clemens, 2000, ALCS Yankees, Game 4. Complete game, 1 hitter, struck out 15, walked 2. Yankees beat the Mariners 5-0, won the series in 6. Number 12, Babe Ruth, 26 World Series, Game 4. Hit 3 home runs in a game. Yanks beat the Cardinals 10-5. First guy to ever hit 3 home runs in a World Series game. Ruth also had an outfield assist, throwing out St. Louis leadoff hitter Taylor Dewitt at home.
Lou Burdett, Game 7, 57 World Series, beat the Yankees, complete Game 7 hitter. Number 10, Edgar Martinez of the Mariners, 95 ALDS, Game 4. Goes 3-for-4, drives in 7. Seattle wins in 5. Babe Ruth, 9. 14-inning complete game in the 1916 World Series. Gave up 6 hits.
And that's only 9.
1 run. Struck out 4. That's 9. But you know what? He's there as both a hitter and a pitcher. This Barry Bonds stuff, you people have to grow up. If you can't pitch, you can't outdo Ruth. You can't. Sarah's next.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Now before we get to phone lines, which are powered by Lenape Solar at 1-800-795-9565 and go to lenapesolar.com. Our show today is brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call 800-609-9484 or visit online at rewfinancial.com. Beautiful Sunbury Motor Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Babe Ruth, we'll get to this. We'll finish this up in a moment. Babe Ruth in 10 years, and he actually pitched, 5 games in his Yankee career? He was actually 5-0, believe it or not, with one complete game.
Undefeated as a Yankee.
Yes, undefeated as a Yankee. He was 94-46 as a pitcher with a career ERA of 2.28. He had 107 complete games out of the 163 he pitched in his career. He had 17 shutouts. He also had 4 saves. He also had 4 blocks. Of course, we know about the hitting. Career average of .342. 714 home runs, 2,213 runs batted in. Yeah, it's these fielding stats, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? Let's see. Miscellaneous stats, base running, blah, blah, blah. He actually stole 17 bases in his career twice in a season. And, of course, we know about what he did in the World Series. Although this theory does not have his World Series numbers. There we go, World Series numbers. World Series numbers for Babe Ruth. Let's see. He was 3-0 as a pitcher in the World Series with 2 complete games and 1 shutout. In 31 innings, he faced 116 batters and gave up 19 hits and 3 runs. How about that one?
I'm shocked. I hadn't heard that statistic before.
In the World Series, he had 15 home runs, which was the record until Mantle broke it with 18. Drove in 33. His World Series average, .326.
.326.
That's his average. It's his average for the whole thing. That's not just a World Series. That's his average for the whole thing. He played 41 World Series games. He had .326. Admittedly, 16 points under his career average. And was 3-0. I mean, you're going to sit there and tell me, and I don't want to hear all the mumbo, well, today's athletes are better conditioned and blah, 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 blah. He still hit 714 home runs. He won 96 games as a pitcher. And for 32 years, he held both the record for the most career World Series home runs with 15 and also the record for 29 2/3 consecutive innings scoreless in the World Series.
And he was listed as incorrigible.
I am sorry, but all you Barry Bonds lovers,
who watched the ball go up the line to Mike LaValliere, I'm sorry. It's not even an argument. Until somebody can come out and pitch like this and hit the way he did, you lose. Simple as that.
Okay. All right. See, so we go to our email. Somebody emailed me the other day, said if it's proper for somebody that never coached you to call them coach, yes.
Wait, say that again?
Somebody asked in an email to me at stevejonesshow.com.
Right.
They were talking about great sports memories and announcers and so forth, and I'm not going to get into it, but they sent some very kind words about Jack and me.
Okay.
Which is very nice. And one last question. I need to know if it's okay to call someone coach if they never coached you. Absolutely, because it's a...
It's a sign of respect for the position,
yes,
too.
Yes, sign of respect for the position. That's
it's like calling the president Mr. Yeah. President. Same thing.
Right, exactly. Let's see. Hi, guys. Just joining the show. Some of us have to work. Kevin.
Thanks.
So not sure if you covered this, but what's the story with Davon Smith? Just saw PennLive.com. He's been dismissed from the Penn State roster. I'm guessing it stems from the charge earlier this year. Who's next on the depth chart? That's Alex Kenny. How productive can they be since I'm pretty sure Smith was a starter? Any info would be greatly appreciated. It would be Alex Kenny next, and that is the spot on the field that is the Wes Welker spot. How about that answer?
Well, that answers the productive question.
Yep. So... And as for the reasons behind it, that's between Bill O'Brien, Davon Smith, and I do not know at all if the university played a role through judicial affairs or anything like that. I don't know. I'm going to have to find that out. But I found out about it a couple days ago, and I saw Bill, and Bill had just come back from Massachusetts, never really got a chance to talk to him about it. Ruth 9, 16 World Series Game 2, that was the 14-inning complete game. 8 Albert Pujols, his 3 home runs against the Rangers in the World Series last fall. Sandy Koufax, game 7, 65. Pitching on 2 days rest, throws a 3-hit shutout, strikes out 10. Beats the Twins. Roy Halladay, his no-hitter, game 1 National League Divisional Series against the Reds. 1-4-0. That was number 6 in postseason moments. How about that?
The last two I thought would be higher than that.
Well, here's the top 5. Reggie Jackson, 3 home runs, Dodgers. Yanks win 8-6, clincher. Three pitches, 3 home runs.
Yeah, that's a top 10 legitimate, yeah.
Bert Hooten, Elias Sosa, Charlie Huff. Number 4, Bob Gibson, strikes out 17 game 1 World Series against the Tigers. Throws a 5-hitter.
Okay, that's legitimate.
Kirby Puckett. Okay. Let's see. He won the game with a walk-off 11th inning home run against Charlie Liebrandt in a 4-3 win over the Braves. He tripled in a run, then scored himself in the first inning. Sack fly put the Twins up 3-2 in the fifth. He stole a base, made a sensational catch on a Ron Gant drive to center. I would put Halladay ahead of that.
Yeah, that's not a top 10 in my mind.
Jack Morris, game 7, World Series, 10 inning complete game.
That's a top 10.
That's ahead of Halladay, too.
Yeah.
That's game 7, all the money on the table.
Right.
As opposed to game 1 of the DS, which is huge. Okay, that was number 2. I would put Halladay ahead of Puckett's number 3. I know that.
Yeah, no doubt.
Number 1, kind of hard to dispute. Don Larson's perfect game.
Yeah, I was going to say, if that's not number 1, this is a joke.
Yeah. All right, top 25 NFL playoff moments. Let's see, top 25 NFL playoff moments.
And again, when it comes to Smith, I don't know if judicial affairs played a role in it or not. That's the part you don't know. You don't know what kind of internal discipline had taken place to then open the door for this. But Alex Kenny is the next guy in the depth chart there. And Alex Kenny, until he had minor, and it was very minor knee surgery, had a great spring, and the transition for him to that spot on the field was very easy. Okay? So that is the guy that takes that spot. Let's see, top 25 playoff moments NFL. Desmond Howard against the Patriots, Super Bowl 31 in his kick returns. Peyton Manning, 2003 wild card game, was number 24. Threw for 377 yards, averaged 14.5 yards per attempt, only threw 26 passes. Super Bowl 10, LC Greenwood against the Cowboys. Sacks were not an official stat. He forced a fumble first play of the game, threw Staubach for a 12-yard loss in the second quarter, ended the Cowboys' first drive of the fourth quarter with a sack. Final sack came second and six late fourth quarter. Oilers corner Vernon Perry. 1979 divisional game versus the Chargers. Let's see. Picked off three passes in the game, enough to help Houston get a 17-14 win. Tom Brady, Broncos, 2011 divisional game. Six touchdown passes with Bill O'Brien calling the plays. 20, Keith Lincoln versus the Patriots, 63 AFL championship game. 13 carries, 206 yards, caught seven passes, 123 yards, and another score.
That's not a bad day.
Oh, but I know the story of the whole deal. Keith Lincoln, his wife goes up to Oregon the night before, because I think it was right before Christmas this happened, or else the day after Christmas. She took the family up, and he was going to join them when they were done. Well, he's lonely, he's at home, the whole thing. He decides to go out with the guys and have some drinks the night before, and he goes way over. He is hungover. Now, the late Bob Meininger told me the story, because he played in the Chargers. He was in this game. Okay? He's in this game. Bob, he was very proud of his 63 AFL championship ring. And Bob's ring did not say AFL champions. It said world champions on it. See, the Chargers thought they could beat the Bears. And you know what? If they were to play the Bears in 63, I think the Chargers would have won. But I guess he takes the ball first play of the game. He goes 80 yards for a touchdown. He gets the goalpost and gets what he does. You don't want to say,
reaction to the night before.
He had a lot of reaction all day, from what Bob says, including it was an incredible performance by Keith Lincoln, but one he'd like to forget. There's how he felt. How about that one?
Wow.
Yeah, Bob told me that. So he told me that story several times. In fact, when I was asked to give Bob's eulogy, I told that story at the eulogy. Let's see, Kurt Warner, Packers, 2009 wild card playoff game, threw for 423, four touchdowns that overtime game. A.J. Dewey versus the Jets, 82, AFC championship game, provided all the points. Game was scoreless at halftime, intercepted three Richard Todd passes. Otto Graham, Browns, Rams, 50 NFL title game. Remember, the Browns have played in the AAFC, the All-America Football Conference. They merge in 1950 to play the Rams. And, of course, the opening night, they set it up. They're going to play the defending world champion Philadelphia Eagles, right? And the Browns kicked the daylights out of them. I mean, Bert Bell set it up deliberately. You know, because they were going to teach the Browns a lesson.
Welcome to the league.
38-10, guess who was welcome to the league?
Yeah.
Graham brings them back and beats the Rams. And remember, the Rams have been in Cleveland. So this is the old Cleveland Rams playing in Los Angeles. Look, the game was played in Cleveland. They were, like, aching to kill the Rams. Okay? And he brings them back. They beat the Rams 30-28. Lynn Swann, Super Bowl 10 against the Cowboys with the four awesome catches. 15, Sid Luckman versus the Redskins. 43 title game through seven touchdown passes. Right, seven, do they? Completed 15 passes, five were touchdowns. Sorry. Kurt Warner, Vikings, 99 divisional playoff game. 391 yards, 5 touchdowns, went over the Vikings. Raymond Berry, 58 NFL title game, the one that put the NFL on the television map when they beat the Giants in overtime. Berry had an incredible game, 178 yards receiving on 12 catches, and had a pair of receptions on the game-winning drive in overtime. 12, Terrell Davis, Packers Super Bowl 32, migraines, the whole deal, rushes for 30 times for 157 yards and scored 3 rushing touchdowns. Aaron Rodgers, Falcons 2010 divisional game, 31 of 36, 366 yards, 3 touchdowns, also ran for another score. Phil Simms, Broncos, near perfection, 22 of 25, 268 yards, and 3 touchdowns. John Riggins, Vikings, 82 divisional playoff game. 37 carries, 185 yards, and a couple of touchdowns.
And there was a guy that wasn't a speed demon back either.
No, he was not.
He got his yards 10 at a time.
Yep, Doug Williams, Broncos, Super Bowl 22, the incredible second quarter.
I was going to say, that was for the second quarter, right?
Yeah, 5 drives, 5 touchdowns. He ended up with 340 yards. Frank Reich, wild card playoff game 92. This one we brought him back.
They the were comeback.
35-3, came back, won in overtime, 41-38.
I remember turning that game off because it was just, this is done. And then seeing the final score.
Miami in college was leading 31-0 over Maryland. Frank Reich was Boomer Esiason's roommate in college at Maryland. Boomer turned the game off. Reich brought them back. They won 35-31. They brought Boomer in as a guest analyst for this game, the Bills-Oilers playoff game, guest analyst, because he was still a player at the time. And he told the story about how he turned the game off with Miami up 31-0, and Reich brought them back. He says, that's my college roommate, and I had to admit to him I turned the game off when he called me. He says, don't count Frank Reich out. I'm going to watch it to the end because I think he'll bring them back. This is 35-3 when he said this. They won 41-38. Timmy Smith, Super Bowl 22 carries, 204 yards. In fact, those are the only 204 yards he gained in his career.
Right, that was it.
Jerry Rice, Super Bowl 23, 3 touchdown catches, incredible. He had 11 catches for 215 yards, remarkable.
What number was that one?
23. That was number 5. In
number
the list.
5, okay.
Marcus Allen, Redskins.
Yes.
Super Bowl 18, incredible performance. 20 carries, 191 yards. I have a story about that after the break. Joe Montana, Super Bowl 24, 5 touchdown passes, 297 yards, beat the Broncos in a bludgeoning. Kellen Winslow helped off the field, 82 divisional playoff game, 13 catches, blocked a kick, the whole nine. You know that. Then they held him off the field, they won. Then they went to Cincinnati and froze to death next week. And then Steve Young, the 6 touchdown passes in Super Bowl 29. All right, come back with that quick story about the Marcus Allen Day in a moment as we continue on the Steve Jones Show on WKOK, brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call 800-609-9484 or visit them online at rewfinancial.com. Back with more after this.
Homeowners and business owners, listen up. What if you could make an investment in something that will never lose its incredible value? Invest in the most abundant commodity there is, the sunshine. Lenape Solar can show you how an investment in a photovoltaic or solar thermal energy system can pay you back through saving money and energy with a great rate of return. In fact, an investment in solar energy pays it forward to your great-grandchildren and to the planet's future. Lenape Solar is your trusted local source for solar energy and energy efficiency solutions. Experts in renewable energy legislation and incentives with professional and certified installers. Take the path towards energy independence by investing in solar energy with Lenape Solar. This is Tanya Diddy, and I invite you to schedule your free energy consultation today by calling 570-286-1496, visiting Lenape Solar at 140 South 2nd Street in Sunbury, or find us online at lenapesolar.com.
Hi, I'm Rick Weibel from REW Financial. I strive to take an eagle-eye approach to your financial future to help give you the freedom to make powerful decisions. I work with you to help you find the discipline you need to get the results you want. I don't believe in just setting it up and letting things go. I'll always be looking to see how we can make things better. REW Financial is an independent company committed to the highest standards of integrity, ethics, and value throughout your financial journey. See us in Lewisburg and Brook Park Farm. Call 800-609-9484 or visit us online at rewfinancial.com.
Okay, a story about the Marcus Allen game. Okay, it was Super Bowl Sunday, and I'm in Boston at the time because Penn State's going to play Boston University the next day on a Monday. It was on a Monday they're going to play. So we fly in to Boston on a Saturday night. On a Saturday night, we fly in. And, I mean, this entire trip was bizarre. Gil Santos was the play-by-play voice of the Patriots. He had set it up in such a way where we were going to get dinner and the whole thing at a place called Sablon's in Boston. It's right near the Garden. So he gives us direct, and we call up, and Gil isn't home, and Roberta's home, his wife, and she gives directions. So we take the directions, we tell the cab driver, boom, we get off, and we're in the Italian section of Boston. Okay? Well, we can't find Sablon's. Thinking, what the heck? So we go into this pharmacy, and the pharmacist is standing there, and we said, do you know where Sablon's is? And he looks at us, and he says, Sablon's. And this old guy pops his head up. He goes, Alan Angie Sablon? And went, yeah. He says, they don't live here no more. Are you kidding me? Well, finally, we get over there. We have a great meal. Then the next day, I sit with Gil and Bob Cousy in the Celtics broadcast booth as the Celtics and Bird and those guys beat the Milwaukee Bucks. After the game, go back to the hotel. It's Dave Baker, John Grant, me. And so Dave and John decide they want to have a little fun here with the Super Bowl, you know? So Dave takes the Raiders, and John takes the Redskins, and they put $20 on the line. Okay. Well, as the game goes along, Dave doesn't want to take John's money. So near the end of the first half, the Redskins get the ball back, and we're going to go to dinner at halftime. Dave says to John, double or nothing on the Raiders scoring before the end of the half. And the Redskins have the ball on their own, like, 3-yard line. So, yeah, okay, great. That's when Theismann throws the interception and Jack Squirek runs it back for a touchdown with 8 seconds left in the half. And now John's down $40. So now we get to the second half. And at the end of near the end of the third quarter, again, the Redskins have the ball and Dave doesn't want John's money. So he says double or nothing on the Raiders scoring before the end of the quarter. And Marcus Allen goes 74 yards for a touchdown. And now John's down $80. Then the Redskins finally score, and Dave is desperate to not take John's money. He says to him, double or nothing on the extra point, and Mosley misses it wide right.
It's almost like he watched the game before.
And John's down $160. The three of us were, when Mosley missed the extra point, the three of us were in absolute stitches because of all the bizarre things. Everything they went double or nothing on, Dave won and John lost, and we were just laughing. It was bizarre. Someone who never loses is Sarah Bartlett. She is next with the news at our news block starting at the top of the hour. Talk to you tomorrow with Matt McGloin on WKOK.
Your station for news, weather, business, and Fox Sports Radio is News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.